It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, overlooking beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 28 degrees. Beautiful white fluffy snow is covering the ground. We're looking for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day, with a high near 36, they're saying. West wind 15 miles per hour. For tomorrow, sunny skies with a high near 30. Northwest wind at 10 miles per hour should become light and variable in the afternoon. On Friday, chance of rain and snow, then rain, then sun. That's your Friday. Coming up on the Midday News, more grim statistics for the Kodiak Island Borough, re-COVID. Why are we getting shipping delays that make our store shelves seem rather bleak at times? Some news about the climate. That and more after headline news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Coronavirus relief talks are still at an impasse in Congress. Here's NPR's Gloria Grisales.
Unfortunately, the devil is in the details. That's what we're seeing slowing down the negotiations now. Both sides are stuck at reaching an agreement on language for a new liability shield for businesses impacted by the pandemic, something that is critical for Republicans in exchange for aid for state and local governments. And that is key for Democrats.
NPR's Gloria Grisales reporting. Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech are reporting a breach of regulatory documents linked to their new COVID-19 vaccine. They say it happened during a cyber attack on the servers of the European Medicines Agency. The company's vaccines have been cleared for use in several countries. It's close to it in the U.S. after an FDA advisory panel meets tomorrow. The Federal Trade Commission suing Facebook over alleged antitrust violations. So are 46 states, the District of Columbia, and Guam. The FTC wants Facebook to sell off WhatsApp and Instagram. Facebook has repeatedly noted the federal regulators review those acquisitions and chose not to block them. When he takes office, President-elect Biden will have to convince Congress to back his choice for Secretary of Defense. Retired General Lloyd Austin's only been out of the military 4 years, and as NPR's Aisha Roscoe explains, for some lawmakers, that's a problem.
Federal law requires a waiver from Congress for any Pentagon chief who has been out of the military for less than 7 years. President-elect Biden says he believes in the importance of civilian control of the military, but he said Lloyd Austin is needed for this moment. Austin stressed that he has left his Army career behind.
It is an important distinction and one that I make with utmost seriousness and sincerity. And so I come to this role, this new role, as a civilian leader.
If confirmed, Austin would be the first African-American to serve as defense secretary. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News.
A day after the Army decided to fire or suspend more than a dozen officers and enlisted soldiers at Fort Hood, a House panel held a hearing on how the military responds to reports of harassment and sexual assault. Here's NPR's Windsor Johnston.
An independent investigation found that chronic failures in leadership at Fort Hood had fostered a pattern of sexual assault, harassment, suicides, and homicides, including that of Army Specialist Vanessa Guillen. Congresswoman Jackie Speier led a delegation to Fort Hood in September.
We met with junior enlisted women who described a culture of sexual harassment, a culture of leaders watching as women and men were harassed before their eyes, but kept silent.
The Army says it plans to create a task force that will be responsible for implementing the committee's recommendations beginning in March. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR.
The Kodiak Island Borough has been ranked relative to other U.S. counties for COVID-19, and the results paint a grim picture. According to the New York Times, the Kodiak Island Borough ranks number 15 highest in the country for cases per resident ranked alongside other counties and boroughs around the United States, with 256.1 cases per 100,000 residents. This would also put the Kodiak Island borough well at the top for Alaska, with the next closest borough being Matanuska-Susitna borough, with 171 cases per 100,000. The Times ranking also doesn't reflect today's numbers, with 57 new cases being reported today for the Kodiak Island borough by the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization. These cases include 24 community transmission cases, 30 close contact cases, and 3 travel-related cases. These cases are divided among 1 new case not being previously reported and tested on December 2nd, 1 on December 3rd, 11 on December 4th, 6 on December 5th, 16 on December 7th, and 22 new cases were tested on December 8th. Hospitalizations have also increased, with total hospitalizations to date climbing to 20, with 7 patients currently hospitalized. There have been 2 deaths to date on Kodiak. This raises the total case count on Kodiak to 598, with 260 cases classified as active locally. As Kodiak enters the winter city, as Kodiak enters the winter season, delays in shipping are becoming more commonplace. This string of recent container ship bypasses was particularly severe, combining unplanned bypasses due to weather with a planned bypass around the Thanksgiving holiday. Michael Murray, store director of the Safeway in Kodiak, says more bypasses of that nature are coming.
There will be 2 anticipated or planned complete Alaska bypasses right after Christmas, the week of New Year's, and then the week after. We do this annually.
According to Murray, Matson container ships come to Alaska twice a week. They originate in Tacoma and arrive in Anchorage before coming to Kodiak on Mondays and Wednesdays.
Bypasses are not fun. We put a lot of work into planning either ulterior modes of transportation, including flying or the ferry when it's available. And Matson works very, very diligently to alleviate any discomfort to our operation and probably others on the island if they can.
Sometimes container ships bypass us for planned weeks, sometimes if the weather is severe. In those conditions, they either come to Anchorage and sail back down to Tacoma without stopping in Kodiak, or they just skip Alaska altogether. The 2020 Arctic Report Card is out, and the results show that the Arctic continues to warm at an accelerated rate. This year was the 2nd warmest on record in the Arctic, with impacts to sea ice, erosion, and marine ecosystems. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Wesley Early has more.
In 2006, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration released its first Arctic report card, laying out a timely snapshot of what the coldest parts of the world looked like as the climate warmed. Rick Toman is a climate specialist with the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Things were starting to change rapidly enough that folks were interested in this near real-time update of a variety of the different parts of the Arctic system.
15 years later, Toman is the lead editor of the 2020 Arctic Report Card. He says even though Alaska didn't have very extreme weather patterns, the Arctic as a whole was impacted.
Some place in the Arctic every year has some extreme. It varies place to place. This year, Siberia, especially Western Siberia, was kind of the focus of the warmth, the very early snowmelt, the wildfires, some of which, you know, were overwinter fires or those zombie fires. Last year it was Alaska. A couple years before that, it was Greenland.
Toman says even though Alaska was impacted a little less this year by the warming climate, it still follows the recent trend.
Whatever the trend is, there's always going to be years above and years below that. We're at the point now, though, for instance, like with erosion. Yeah, it wasn't as much as last year, but it's always going to be more than it was in the 1950s.
One of the facets of the Arctic most impacted by a warming climate is sea ice. Toman says this year followed a trend of shrinking sea ice in the Arctic.
The lowest it got at any point was the 2nd lowest. Only the 2012 minimum extent was lower. And then in the winter, the maximum extent that it got on any one day was the 12th lowest.
Low sea ice extent impacts much of the Arctic ecosystem, forcing marine mammals like walruses and seals to haul out on tiny patches of land rather than the thick, rich sea ice they'd been accustomed to. Toman says that bowhead whales in Alaska waters are in a slightly better position than other marine mammals due to their ability to swim much farther to get to the zooplankton that they eat.
If their food supply is very far north one year, because that's where the ice is, they have the ability to go and get that food, unlike other species that have a much shorter range.
While that works well for the whales, Toman says new feeding routes have the potential to upset subsistence whale harvests from Alaska's northernmost indigenous populations.
From the whale perspective, well, you know, if they have to go 600 miles north of the Alaska coast to find food, for a bowhead, that's not a problem. You know, we can swim that far, no problem. At what point it becomes the whales are there, but they're not accessible for Alaskans, that's a different question.
Basically, Toman says what was once abnormal or unusual in terms of Arctic climate is now normal. The Arctic is transforming, and populations will have to adapt. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Wesley Early in Kotzebue.
Three Kenai Peninsula legislators released a joint statement on Monday afternoon. They are calling on Governor Mike Dunleavy to join Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's suit asking the U.S. Supreme Court to order state legislatures in Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin to refuse to honor election results in their states and choose new presidential electors. The Texas suit alleges that changes made to voting procedures in the interest of public safety were unlawful. The letter is signed by District 29 Representative Ben Carpenter of Kenai, District 30 Representative-elect Ron Gillum of Soldotna, and District 31 Representative Sarah Vance of Homer. In October, the Alaska Supreme Court upheld a lower court decision ruling that Alaska voters in the November 3rd election did not need a second witness in order to vote by absentee ballot. The legislators maintain in their letter that the Alaska Supreme Court does not have the authority to waive the witness signature on absentee ballots, and that, quote, the court's actions call into question the legitimacy of the 2020 election results. It's unclear if Representatives Carpenter and Vance and Representative-elect Gillum believe their own elections to be illegitimately won. The letter only asks Governor Dunleavy to join the Texas suit, which seeks to overturn the 2020 presidential election results in states won by President-elect Joe Biden. KBBI reached out to representatives for comment on Monday, but they had not yet received any response as yet. A Metlakatla man in his 60s allegedly died at the hands of his neighbor over the weekend. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, a 36-year-old man was jailed on Saturday, and prosecutors say he's admitted to the grisly crime.
William Taylor faces criminal charges, including first-degree murder after allegedly knifing his neighbor, Edward Buddy Starish. Metlakatla is Alaska's only indigenous reserve, and with a population of around 1,500 people, it's very tight-knit, says Mayor Reginald Atkinson.
First of all, you know, our hearts go out to both sides of the family there, and it's really hit Metlakatla hard, and we're still feeling the impact and the aftermath.
According to court filings, Metlakatla police got an emergency call shortly after 9 a.m. Saturday. They arrived at Starish's home to find him gravely injured with knife wounds and lying on the ground outside of his home. He was rushed by ambulance to Metlakatla's clinic. A Coast Guard helicopter flew him to Ketchikan's hospital. Authorities say that's where he died later that day. Officers say they found Taylor at his parents' home where he lives. He'd reportedly confessed to his father, who told police of his son's admission. Another witness told officers they had seen Taylor running from Starish's home shortly before police arrived. Prosecutor Timothy McGillicuddy didn't mince words during a Monday court hearing.
This was a chilling and brutal, premeditated first-degree homicide.
He told District Court Judge Kevin Miller that after Taylor was brought to Ketchikan, he was briefly hospitalized for an unrelated medical condition. McGillicuddy says he began to confess to state troopers on his own accord while being treated.
He wasn't questioned about what he had done, but he made a number of statements indicating that he had planned to commit this murder, that he intended to commit the murder, the brutal way in which he committed the murder, and his motive for doing so.
McGillicuddy didn't say what those alleged motives were. Metlakatlinpolis police said they didn't know why he allegedly killed his neighbor. Taylor's attorney, a public defender in Ketchikan, declined to comment on Tuesday.
We have, you know, tragedies here, but nowhere near this level or magnitude.
That's Metlakatla Mayor Reginald Atkinson again. He says he lives just down the street from Starish, and he says the community is still processing what happened last weekend.
I can't imagine what we're going through. We're still recovering from a state of shock. Most of the community is still in the kind of so-called numb phase right now.
Taylor was jailed Tuesday at Ketchikan Correctional Center. Bail is set at $500,000. He's due back in court next month. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Large whale entanglements are fairly rare in Alaska. Only around 10 are spotted each year, and most whales shed the marine debris or fishing gear on their own. But once or twice a year, human intervention is required to save a whale's life. On Thanksgiving Day, the small community of Tenakee Springs came together to do just that. KCAW's Aaron McKinstry has this report.
It was the middle of the night on the day before Thanksgiving when a gut-wrenching sound awoke residents in the Chichagof Island town of Tenakee Springs.
It was a pretty sad and mournful and awful sound.
Boy, I am not real good at making, but it was kind of a...
Wendy Stern and Steve Lewis didn't actually hear the noises until later in the day when the sound carried closer to their homes. But they were among the first to respond to its source, a 40-foot humpback whale caught in Tanner crab pot gear that, according to resident Gordon Chu, came from Kodiak, around 630 miles away.
People were very shaken up after losing a lot of sleep and listening to a bellowing humpback whale all night.
Chu awoke to calls from those distressed residents and sprang into action. He, Lewis, and Stern are all part of a network of volunteers trained by NOAA to respond to whale entanglements. As soon as they got the go-ahead from NOAA, Chu and Lewis headed out in a skiff to collect footage, while Stern followed in a support boat. An orange buoy marked the spot where the animal was now frozen in place. Slowly, Chu lowered a waterproof video camera on a long pole into the water.
It had an anchor on the tail, lines going forward, a buoy in its mouth, another buoy at its tail, and it really could barely move.
We could hear it breathing, and it was labored the way it was pinched and folded in half.
And it was hogtied at first, so it was kind of bent into a bow.
It's awful to see an animal all bound up like that.
They relayed photos and footage to people like large whale entanglement specialist Sadie Wright at NOAA.
So we're able to work with those folks in Tenakee to evaluate the photos and the video, come up with a safe and deliberate plan to do these disentanglement tactics from a distance to keep people safe.
That's because disentangling a whale is dangerous. Don't try this at home. Both Chu and Lewis have had extensive training, have access to specialized tools, and have assisted with multiple entanglements over the years. And they consulted with NOAA every step of the way. Chu says even some of the most experienced responders have been killed.
You know, a 40-ton animal can do an awful lot of damage. A pectoral fin can weigh 900 pounds, just the fin off the side of the animal. So, if it comes down on you or your boat, it would be very, very bad.
By the time they were ready to try to cut the whale free, it was Thanksgiving morning. Two more boats joined them, and residents gathered on shore to help with communications. And a long, careful dance began, what Stern describes as an agonizingly slow process.
Everyone thinks it's maybe some kind of like YouTube video or something, where you go out and then there's these heroes and... maybe they're in wetsuits and they go down and they cut off the gear. The whale jumps in the air and there's a rainbow. And it's just not that way.
First, they cut the whale free from the 400-pound crab pot, weighing it down.
There she goes. That's free?
Then they followed the whale as it began to swim, hoping it would shed the remaining gear. Chu made several attempts to cut it away, but he was ultimately unsuccessful. Finally, as the daylight waned and the whale approached the rougher waters of Chatham Strait, they cut a buoy off the base of its tail.
And then it took a dive and we never saw it again.
Just in time for Thanksgiving dinner.
Helping a big animal like that is a wonderful way to spend Thanksgiving, actually. And we were pretty happy to be able to spend our day doing something really good for the world, or at least for that whale.
But like most real life stories, this one doesn't have a definitive happy ending. The whale was still trailing some lines and had a buoy stuck in its mouth. NOAA experts say it's highly likely that the powerful animal will shake the remaining gear. But unless someone spots the 16-year-old humpback again, who's since been photo-identified as a known Southeast Alaska whale, they won't know for sure.
Gosh, it would be nice to know the end of the story. It's part of the part for me that's kind of hard. I just wish I knew what ultimately happens to this whale.
But maybe, just maybe, one of Tenneke's many whale-loving mariners will deliver that happy ending soon. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Future generations of fishermen are set to get a helping hand from Uncle Sam. More after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at AMC.org.
U.S. fishermen will soon be eligible to receive training and financial benefits long enjoyed by farmers and ranchers. The Young Fishermen's Development Act is poised to be passed this week with a simple voice vote in the House because it has so much support, according to Congressman Don Young's office. The act was introduced in 2019 by Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan. It easily passed the Senate last week. Modeled after the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program that can be traced back to 1862, it creates the first federal-backed program dedicated to future generations of fishermen. Linda Bankin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka, one of a national coalition that helped herd the act through Congress.
Young fishermen not only have to know how to catch fish, they have to keep track of a fairly complex regulatory world in fisheries. And as small businessmen, they also have to be able to make sound decisions about how to grow their businesses.
The bill directs the National Sea Grant Office under NOAA to establish a program to provide training, education, outreach, and technical assistance for young fishermen. Eligibility includes associations, tribes, universities, and other mentors. The $2 million program will be paid out over 6 years and is funded by fishing fines. So in a way, fishermen are picking up the tab themselves. By comparison, mandatory federal backing for ranchers and farmers, including mariculture, is $15 million for this fiscal year and $25 million in 2023. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the ninth day of December, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 9:41 this morning, and it will set again at 4:22 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 41 minutes of precious daylight. That is a loss of a mere 1 minute and 47 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 3:24 p.m. of 2.15 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:17 this evening of 6.6 feet. Our next low tide after that will be at 3:14 in the morning, 1.53 feet, followed by a high tide tomorrow morning on the east side at 9:52 a.m., 8.8 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Euganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 4:01 this afternoon. That will be a 3.1-foot tide, followed by a high tide at exactly 10 p.m. of 12.15 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 4:06 a.m., 2.7 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 10:25, and it will be a 14.84 foot tide. Well, the temperature has shot right up to 32 degrees here in downtown Kodiak. We're looking for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon with a high going to 36, west wind to 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20. Partly cloudy skies tonight, a low of about 22. And for tomorrow, sunny skies, high near 30, northwest winds becoming light and variable in the afternoon. Friday, though, we're looking at a chance of rain and snow between noon and 3 p.m. on Friday, then rain after that, and partly sunny skies, too, with a high near 36 on Friday. Winds could gust as high as 30 on Friday, so good old Kodiak weather coming on Friday. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A low pressure will linger over the Gulf through Thursday night, and a front will approach the Southwest Gulf Thursday night. Your resulting weather... Kodiak's east side offshore, Marmot Island to Sitkanak. Small craft advisory through tonight with west wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 11 feet. For tonight, northwest winds to 25 knots, seas coming down to 8 feet, but freezing spray near the coast. For Thursday night, look for east wind to 30 knots and seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof, Kodiak's west side, small craft advisory through tonight with south winds to 20 knots right now, becoming west 25 this afternoon. Seas to 6 feet with freezing spray in the Shelikof. For tonight, west wind to 25 knots, seas to 7 feet and freezing spray. And for tomorrow night in the Shelikof, northeast wind to 30 knots, seas to 10 feet. Kodiak City Council will hold a regular council meeting tomorrow. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials will be participating via audio-video conferencing, maybe a few in person. Public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT right here on 100.1 FM. This is a virtual meeting, so for everyone's protection, there will be no in-person attendance for this meeting. For participation, please call 486-8610 during the meeting for public comment. And for any questions, call the clerk's office at 486-8636. Here are your meetings coming up for the Kodiak Island Borough. All of these meetings are via teleconference. For today at 6:30 p.m., the Planning and Zoning Commission is having their work session. Tomorrow at 6:30 p.m., the Assembly will be having their work session. Thursday, December 10th, the Assembly will be having a special meeting. And on Monday, December 14th, the Consolidation Committee will be having a meeting at 6:30 p.m. And again, links to all those will be at the Kodiak Island Borough website. Help support youth activities in Kodiak this weekend. It's the last Kiwanis Tree Sales weekend. That's going on Friday from 4 to 7 p.m., Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sundays noon to 4 p.m. That's happening at 111 Bartell Avenue at the Worldwide Movers Building. And water and sewer utility customers, you still have time until the 15th, another week. If you have not yet signed up for your $500 billing credit, and any city water and sewer customer, whether you live inside the city or not, is eligible if you have any kind of financial repercussions from COVID-19. And just a hint, I heard at the work session last night, that amount might go up. Just a reminder, the Kodiak Island Borough is in red status, which means that all retail and service types of businesses and activities, indoor recreational activities, bars, restaurants, religious gatherings, grocery, and or any business service that is open to the public is now restricted to 25% customer capacity. This capacity is calculated from the business fire marshal occupancy load. And remember, there are no businesses that are required to be closed, but you are required to use, you are encouraged to use online shopping, appointment shopping, and curbside service.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.